Aki Ito is a senior correspondent at Insider, talking usually about the workplace, and we'll talk about that today. Thanks for joining us again. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks. Thanks for having me in.
So I'm just reading from your piece in Business Insider. It's funny because it seems like the employees don't want to come back. And if there's a tit for tat, is it that maybe some employers are going, you know what, and I'm not even sure we need you full time anyway. Is that the exchange that's happening?
Yeah. Essentially, businesses have always had an incentive to have fewer full-time employees and more contractors, more part-time employees, more temps, just because that's a much cheaper form of employment. You don't have to pay out all these expensive benefits for your employees. But the reason they were unwilling to do that was because they couldn't imagine not supervising the people who work for them in person in the office. And if you were going to have them come into the office, then, you know, it made more sense to actually pay them out of benefits, make sure that they were working on a full-time basis. Once, you know, remote work became a thing, companies realized that they didn't need to supervise in person anymore, that employees are perfectly capable of getting their work done from home. And companies thought, well, like if you know, employees aren't going to come in person, if we're going to have this kind of more transactional form of employment anyway, we might as well not pay out in all these forms of expensive benefits and perks. And just convert our employees from full-time status to part-time status or contractor status or temporary status.
I just think that's so interesting. I did not anticipate that. In your story, you say one survey confirms the shift from full-time employment. It's now estimated that if you include gig workers, contract, freelance, temporary workers, that is now 36% of the workforce. Does that number surprise you?
You know, I think when we were all going through 2020 and starting to realize that the shift to work from home was going to become a permanent thing, I think very few of us were thinking so far, you know, down the road to expect that this would be one of the unintended consequences, I guess, of the shift to work from home. I think for the most part, the shift to work from home has been really beneficial for workers. A lot of people really like this arrangement. But I think this shift away from traditional full-time employment is probably something that a lot of workers are concerned about, especially if they have remote status right now.
I'm trying to think of then, yeah, I mean, at first blush, you would think this is bad for employees. But maybe there's some inherent flexibility in essentially being a gig worker for what would have been a full-time employer?
There are definitely a lot of pluses to this kind of more flexible form of work, too. The most obvious one is that it is inherently a more flexible style of working. For example, if you're a contractor, you know, you don't have to commit to typical hours usually, so you can work on your own time. You know, you can set your own, you know, work schedule. That's a wonderful thing that a lot of people want and a lot of people need, especially, let's say, if you're a parent with young kids. And, you know, if you're a full-time employee, you might have to follow your employer's return to office mandate, especially now that the economy is opening up. But if you're a contractor, then, you know, you don't have to follow that. So, yeah, there's a lot of freedom and flexibility that comes with this style of work that a lot of people prefer. But I do think one of the things we need to be careful about is that there is a small but probably growing share of people who are doing this kind of work who prefer full-time employment instead because of the benefits that they get from full-time employment.
I'm also one of these people, and I'm not alone, who've always been part of a team, this radio station or that radio station. And the idea that now I'm just a peripheral player in some corporation, I'm not really an employee, seems a little disaffected or disjointed to me. I don't always like the team that I've been on, but I've always felt like I belonged somewhere. And now I would be an independent contractor. And that's not the only consideration in the Business Insider story by Aki Ito. I'm out of time today, but Aki, it's very interesting. Thanks for joining us. Let's do this again.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Bree Fowler, a senior reporter at CNET, about Threads. Talk to me about that, Bree. What's going on here?
It's pretty much the only news in tech today.
Yeah. Well, and it's a competitor now of Twitter. This is the Meta or Facebook product out there that a lot of us are being asked to download. It's an app that we can start using. What does it do and why are they doing it?
Well, when you look at it, it looks a lot like Twitter, and it also looks a lot like Instagram, too. Meta is making it very, very easy for existing Instagram users to just sign up, use their existing Instagram login, even your profile picture, all of your contacts, everyone that you follow will transfer over too if you want it to, which is, you know, a big reason why they've picked up so many millions of people in less than 24 hours. But as far as it works, it works a lot like Twitter, Instagram. People post. You can put up to 500 characters, videos of up to 5 minutes long. And this is a direct competitor to Twitter.
Is it them going after Twitter because they feel that Twitter is vulnerable right now? Would they be doing this anyway? What's the strategy here?
Well, I think this is really, from a business standpoint, the perfect timing for them. I mean, Twitter, you could say they're struggling. You could say they're in a death spiral. They've been having so many problems lately, retaining advertisers and users. People are fed up, and a lot of people and businesses and news organizations have left already. Meta can just sweep in and take a lot of that audience if they do this right.
Yeah, although Twitter is still a valuable platform. I'm on it to just as a nice aggregator of various websites. I can scroll through, see stories, see pictures, see screen grabs, and then click on the ones I want. If this other one works that way, I could see how attractive it would be. But it's not there yet. It doesn't have the kind of critical mass that even Twitter has right now, right?
Well, it has user critical mass, people that are joining and following. But, you know, what I realize is it basically looks like my Instagram feed with less pictures. I use Instagram for much different stuff than I do Twitter. Twitter is for news and for information and keeping track of, you know, less interesting people like politicians and companies and news organizations. You know, Instagram, it's a lot of dog rescues and pictures of bread and, you know, fun stuff. So in order for me to switch all of my Twitter usage over to something like this, it's going to take a lot of tedious effort to just add people one by one. And I'm not really sure I'm ready to do that.
Is it possible Twitter will go away in my lifetime? Do you think it might actually dissolve?
Oh, sure. I mean, Twitter could dissolve in the next 6 months, irregardless of Threads and Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, they've had so many problems, even if you just look at it from a business standpoint. You know, last week they were capping the number of posts that people could look at, which is really terrible. I mean, it just shows how their infrastructure has fallen apart and they don't have the people to kind of keep the ship afloat at this point. You know, these companies make money off of eyeballs because advertisers pay for you to see their ads. And if people are getting cut off after 600, 1,000 posts, advertisers aren't getting a whole lot of bang for their buck and they're going to go elsewhere.
Will Threads charge me a premium subscription service like Twitter does?
I really don't see them doing that, at least not right off the bat. If you look at their data collection and data privacy policies, they're collecting a lot more data than Twitter ever did. And this is something that users should be wary of, too. You need to be careful about what you give any kind of Meta product access to as far as your personal information. This is how they're making money. They don't need $8 a month. You know, whereas Twitter was really looking to get that. Yeah, they definitely are hurting a bit more.
Real quick, speaking of Elon Musk, it's interesting, though. It's not all bad news. Tesla sales are up, right?
Yeah, Tesla saw their sales rise in the second quarter. they're doing pretty good. I mean, a lot of that has to do with the fact that all auto sales are expected to be up this quarter. Suppliers are kind of, you know, getting back in gear. People are buying cars despite higher interest rates. But also, tax incentives have really kicked in for Teslas and other electronic vehicles to the point where, you know, you could buy a Tesla Model 3 sedan for less than $33,000. And that's less than you would pay for a luxury sedan that runs on gas and, you know, definitely puts it more into the mass market. Hmm.
Okay. Always interesting. Bree Fowler, senior reporter at CNET. Thank you so much, Bree.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is John Williams. Pete Zimmerman is the producer, and Laura Dribben is our guest from Peridius Consulting. We have talked to her before. Let's talk to her again a little bit about you, the entrepreneur who sometimes struggles with doubt about your job, your company. Thanks for joining us again, Laura. How are you?
Good, John. Thanks so much for having me back. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, but then again, I'm not an entrepreneur. You know, I'm working for somebody else. And you said that a lot of times people on their winding road towards success experience self-doubt. They wonder why they're not super successful, why they're not a household name. They thought maybe they would be further along than they are. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had sort of a crisis around 25 years after doing this. I started my business 33 years ago. I did it as a new mother. But I had started it out with three priorities that were important to me to build the business around what I wanted. I started a consulting firm. Part of my goal, one of my priorities was to make sure that I got back to consulting, program management, to be specific. I wanted flexibility in my life, and I wanted to make sure that I wasn't a road warrior anymore. I had been a road warrior up until then, and I wanted to make sure that I didn't travel for business anymore. And what I found is I spent my entire life living to those tenets. So when I hit 25 years of business, my kids were out of the house. You know, my life had changed a little bit from that, and I was wondering, why am I not bigger? And so I had a moment of crisis wondering, what did I do wrong? And it took me a little while to figure it out. But I think that's the thing that I think many entrepreneurs forget, because mm-hmm. you see, someone want to be the next Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos, and sometimes what you're doing gets lost in that noise.
Well, what did you discover? I mean, was it just a realization that I don't have to be Bill Gates to be successful and happy? What's the process?
Well, I think what my process was through years was that those three things that I mentioned that I built my business around, I lived those tenets. Anything that went against it. Like, I had a networking event in the evening. I'm like, nope, I want to be home with my family. So I didn't go to those. And so I lived that for years. And what ended up happening is, what I realized is, I actually got exactly what I had wanted. And I lived those priorities. So that's the model of the business that I got. We are a great consulting firm, do great work. But I have not only myself, but my employees get to enjoy a work-life balance. It's a little less stressful versus what would have gotten me to be bigger would have been to change those priorities. And that wasn't what was important to me. So I think it's I think entrepreneurs have to remember why they went about it and live the priorities they set out from the beginning.
Yeah, I was looking at some of your work where you define and understand your goals, live your goals. You said everybody needs time off. You said make sure you love what you're doing. And I think the fourth one was really intriguing too. Find time to do other things in life and not just vacation. I think a lot of us say, okay, I have my job, but I go on vacation a couple weeks a year. So that's something else. It sounds like you would say, no, that's not. What are you talking about in that fourth one?
Well, my work was never my number one priority in life. I had other things that interested me. So I think we talked about this the last time I was on. I took an improv class a couple of years ago because I was intrigued. I thought I was funny. It turned out I wasn't, but I enjoyed the class. I make sure that I go to, I have a subscription to theater because I enjoy that. So I'm a biker. So I just make sure that I'm doing all the things that I enjoy in life and not just making work my entire focus. I think it's important, John, to point out that, if someone, an entrepreneur's focus is to get as big as you can and make money, there's nothing wrong with it. Just understand that you have to live that then. And as a good friend of mine said, you can have anything, but you just can't have everything.
Yeah, I remember saying somebody, I may have shared this with you before, but you're reminding me of it again. And it was, good job, great kids, clean house, pick two. That you
exactly.
You can't have it all. And that sounds rather cliche, but in fact, it is true. Or you'll kill yourself. You'll make yourself miserable trying. Do you work with entrepreneurs then on this work-life balance? Is that part of your consulting now?
It's not officially, but I do try and mentor and coach entrepreneurs when I can, because I think it's important. I think it's very easy to get caught up in the noise of watching other companies and comparison. That is the death of joy, I believe it's something to that effect is the saying. And it's easy to compare. I have caught myself doing that myself at times, looking at other entrepreneur friends who are growing. And that was sort of tied to that 25 years when I realized, well, their priorities are different than mine. And, they have put in the time that I was not interested in doing from the beginning.
But I like that you say that if, in fact, you don't want to have kids, I mean, everybody has their own priority. And if you are driven to be the next Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Bill Gates or who are the entrepreneurs of our age, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But go into that wide-eyed, right?
Absolutely. There's no judgment on what your priorities are. It's just a matter of that when you set those priorities, you need to live them. So being the next Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, that takes a lot of effort into building your business. It becomes your only focus in many cases. And if that's what you want, great. Just be aware that the way to do that is to live it. I turned things down. I at the time, which probably prevented part of my growth, but I have a nice business that and got the other things in my life that I wanted, that flexibility, that, the focus on not doing travel for work. Now, I happen to love travel, so I've taken quite a bit of time doing, now that my kids are out of the house, I am a digital nomad. So a couple months out of every year, I have been picking a different country and working remote. So
sounds fun. That sounds what a luxury for you. What a great way to sort of imagine your life. I'm thinking as you speak that if we pursued success in other areas of our life, the way so many of us are so focused on our jobs, imagine how much richer our relationship with our spouses would be, or our kids, or our avocations, our hobbies. If we said, no, I'm really going to work at this, I'm going to make that a big part of my life. And for some of us, it's just the sort of fallback. When I'm done with everything else, maybe I'll get to that. And you're making me think differently about that. Laura Dribben is the founder of Paritus Consulting. That's P-E-R-I-T-I-U-S, Paritus Consulting. and it's Paritus.com. Am I saying that right? Oh, Paritus, right?
Paritus Consulting.
Yeah,
Paritus.
Just like it sounds, Paritus, Paritus.
That's okay, John. Consulting. Everyone gets caught up by it.
It's nice to talk to you, Laura. Thanks for visiting with us again.
Thanks so much, John. I appreciate the time.
More business news now with Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. More job cuts are on the way for Walgreens. The Deerfield-based company says it'll cut 400 jobs next month, closing its distribution center in downstate Edwardsville. This after the company announced some 500 corporate jobs will be eliminated. They also have plans to close 150 stores nationwide and another 300 in the UK. Walgreens said they want to find ways to better ship orders to customers' homes through their stores. Is a strike in the offing for UPS? The company and the 340,000 workers nationwide can't come to an agreement. The contract expires at the end of the month. Honda is recalling over 100,000 vehicles due to brake issues. The recall includes certain recent model Civic, Ridgeline, Passport, Pilot, and Acura MDX vehicles. Letters to owners will be mailed next month. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Okay, let's get to the business of food then. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And we are going to pry open the Wayback Machine for a couple of minutes today.
Carve out some fun this Halloween and come out to Pumpkin Fest, Saturday, October 25th. It's fun for the whole family.
Yeah, there was a five-year stretch in the mid-90s when WGN listeners drove to Gobert's Pumpkin Farm in South Barrington.
And be sure to bring your food or your money donations to help feed the hungry around Chicagoland.
You have no idea how many people came out there to drop off food. We had trailers and trailers of food.
That's Marlene Wells, who runs all of our promotions and merchandising at WGN. More from her and from Max Armstrong.
It was always a huge turnout, and it was so enjoyable.
As we say farewell to the farmer who helped make it all happen. Jim Gobert passed away recently at the age of 94. He and his wife, Esther, opened their farm to our family.
Stop by and meet your favorite WGN radio personalities.
Led by the late Bob Collins.
Uncle Bob was probably the prime MC of the event. But we had everyone come out. We had Floyd Brown out there and Ann Maxfield and Roy Leonard and Kathy and Judy, Ian Punnett, Spike, Steve and Johnny. The whole family was out there.
Orion and Max?
Yep, Orion and Max.
And many more. And speaking of Max, I interrupted his first week of retirement for a few words about Jim Gobert.
It always struck me that Jim and Esther were so good for this business of agritourism, before we started calling it agritourism, because they weren't just selling the product, weren't just selling produce. It was an experience there, to be sure. And not everybody's cut out for that. You know, you almost have to be a people person, and certainly the Goberts have been.
Thank you, Max Armstrong, and thank you, Marlene Wells, as we remember the late Jim Gobert.
He's a grand gentleman.
Gobert's Pumpkin Farm, a half mile west of Barrington Road on Diggins.
And we're sponsored today by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. On the food calendar, today is National Fried Chicken Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Adam Hasmeyer joins us now. Hasmeyer is the group CEO of Kin and Carta Americas. And he joins us on WGN. Thanks for giving us a minute of your time, Adam. How are you?
You bet, John. Thanks for having me. I'm doing really well.
This is a digital transformation consultancy company. I don't know what I just said.
Fair enough, John. Would you like me to let you know what a digital transformation consultancy means to us?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're builders, John. And so we use technology to help our clients, which are primarily Fortune 500 enterprise clients, accelerate their digital roadmaps and build. And that building tends to come in the form of cloud monetization, so partnering with the likes of Google and Microsoft to help organizations better utilize cloud services and technology. It also comes in the form of building bespoke custom mobile applications and software. It also comes in the form of data and AI, which many of us are hearing now with really the surge around generative AI, the technology that we're hearing a lot about today.
It was a big part of what you used to do, SEI, and is it still that?
Could you say that again, John? Sorry.
Sure. Search engine optimization, I guess, is what I'm thinking about. It seems to me like somebody like you would be very involved in helping a company make sure that my company pops up when somebody's doing a search. Is that something you guys do as well?
Great question, John. We do not at Kin & Carta, and that tends to fall more in kind of the world of marketing technology organizations that are driving demand and driving interest for products. We are actually building the software, so building the web experiences, building the mobile experiences, and helping organizations gather the power of the data that fundamentally delivers loyalty programs or personalized experiences. Think about when you go to Netflix or when you go to Amazon and you're seeing their products and services that may or may not be of interest to you specifically, John, but are fundamentally being delivered because they're driving some sort of incremental business value to the organizations that are serving those up.
So give me an example then. You mentioned those two companies, but tell me a little bit about how you work with these companies and how I would receive it as a consumer.
Yeah, John. So if you were to open up your phone and you were to go to your favorite local coffee house, or maybe it's a large global coffee retailer, and you wanted to place an order, you would open up an application that was designed and built by Kin & Carta. You would be presented with unique offerings, John, based on your personal consumption, maybe the consumption of your family, of all the coffee and variety of coffee products or baked goods that you might have. You check out. You go and pick up those services. On the back end, John, there's a lot that's being processed in the form of data, point of sale data, customer information that's providing you with very specific, unique offerings so that ultimately you can go to your corner shop, pick up your order, and be served and delivered in a very efficient way.
People are very protective of their data, and I think it's seen generally in a negative light, but you're describing it in a way, but here's the upside of that. Data sharing also streamlines my experience, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you know, there are benefits to the user. There are certainly risks. It all depends upon how people are accessing and using that information and for what purposes.
Can you talk a little bit about AI then? How is it that you all are using that? And I don't know who's teaching people how to generate this sort of ChatGPT or AI stuff. Who's the expert on something that is as new as this technology is?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the adoption is happening quite rapidly. I'll give you a quick anecdote, but it was very clear to me in a matter of a week, my mother, my wife, and my 10-year-old daughter all asked how we're using ChatGPT at work. And John, my wife, mother, and 10-year-old daughter have never asked how we're using any technology at work. And I think it's the first time that this technology has gone from the labs to the enterprise to the Hasmeyer dinner table at the exact same time. And so what I'm saying to you is that people are figuring out the adoption. Large language models have been around for a long period of time. Chatbots have been around for a long period of time. But what we're seeing, we're probably at the top of the hype cycle, but what we're seeing is that there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of energy that surrounds the use of these tools because it is quite valuable. And we're seeing how language is now being processed by computers in new and imaginative ways that we hadn't been able to effectively do in the past. So there are certainly experts that have been in this field of science for long periods of time, but the adoption of the tools and the underlying technology that's powering it, primarily through the large hyperscalers like Microsoft and Google, and through the OpenAI project, are now being adopted by the enterprise. And really, it's a race. It's a race for organizations to understand how they can better serve their clients, how they can better create operational efficiencies within their businesses to adopt these tools and unlock that power.
Are businesses actually doing that? Are they adopting it? Are mom and pop shops or medium-sized businesses using this kind of AI right now?
I would say not yet. But I do believe that the adoption for, you know, more of your Main Street businesses, more of your mid-sized businesses will come over the period of months, probably not measured in years.
Do you have a worry about the adoption of AI this way?
I do. Yeah, I absolutely do. And I think it's coming so quickly that we've got to wrap our arms around what is the responsible usage of AI in these scenarios look like. And we're just now uncovering all the potential areas in which individuals, businesses, our society at large, there are consequences to letting this run rampant. I do do also agree that, you know, often through lots of regulation, we can dampen innovation cycles. And so it needs to be balanced, like most things. But it is certainly a topic that's of interest to us and should be for most folks.
This is fascinating. Adam, I'm out of time. I want to talk to you more about this another day. Adam Hasmeyer and his family. He is the group CEO of Kin and Carta Americas. And it's nice to have you on the show today. Thanks for the insight.
I appreciate it, John. Thank you.
You can find them at kinandcarta.com.